The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is no substitute for professional care by your doctor or your qualified healthcare professional. Never disregard or delay professional medical advice because of something you've heard on this podcast or in any linked material. Guests who speak on this podcast express their own opinions, experience, and conclusions. Dr. Shirley neither endorses nor opposes any particular opinion discussed on this podcast. The views expressed on this podcast have no relation to those of any academic, hospital, practice, institution, or other entity with which Dr. Shirley may be affiliated.
Welcome to Forever Fab, the podcast on fashion, the art of living, and all things beauty. This podcast is curated by Dr. Shirley Madeer, MD, as the definitive source of holistic wellness through beauty.
This week's episode is dedicated to communication. The title of this episode is, What Do You Have to Say and How Do You Say It? How many times can you say it in how many languages? This is my interview with Gabriel Weiner. Do you remember the language requirement in school? Were you excited by it? Or did you dread having yet another thing to pack into your head? What language did you learn? Did you hold on to it? Or were you able to just pass the course and leave it behind? I believe that language is currency. I was, and still very much am, one of those people who wanted to travel the world and learn at least 5 languages. I wasn't able to learn them all while being a double major in English and biology, pre-med, and a French literature minor in school, but the desire continues to live within me. So, what I did was learn a word here, a word there, a phrase here, a phrase there, whenever I could, as an adult, when time allowed. My next guest has mastered 6 languages: Spanish, German, French, Russian, Italian, Hungarian, and Japanese. Gabriel Weiner was born in Los Angeles, and along his learning journey, he graduated summa cum laude in 2007 from the University of Southern California with dual degrees in mechanical engineering and vocal arts performance. Can't wait to hear that voice. After he was awarded the Renaissance Scholars Prize for Excellence in unrelated disciplines, he moved to Vienna to pursue a triple master's degrees in 2011. Searching for a way to bring this immersive language learning experience home with him from Vienna, Gabe began to apply his analytical and engineering talents to developing a system that rapidly builds fluency with short daily sessions without the need for a tutor or immersion. So in 2010, his efforts paid off, and using his custom design system, he reached fluency in French in 5 months, followed by Russian in 10 months. Gabe is the founder and CEO of Fluent Forever. He is a best-selling author, an opera singer, and a polyglot, now based in Chicago, Illinois. His book, Fluent Forever, How to Learn Any Language Fast and Never Forget It, became a national bestseller. The Fluent Forever app is built around his method and is currently used by tens of thousands of people each month, having reached people in over 100 countries around the world by 2021. Gabe joins me today via StreamYard on the Forever Fab podcast to discuss language, goals, and the Fab 5 words you need to know in every language. Welcome, Gabe. Congratulations on your success, and thank you for becoming a member of this beautiful Forever Fab community. I'm very anxious to hear the answers to these questions, and also to hear your voice. I understand you have a degree or in vocal arts, so let's hear it.
Thank you for having me, Shirley. Real pleasure to be here.
When did you realize the power of language, or that there is power and influence in being able to speak more than one language?
So my first immersion experience was in the Middlebury, Vermont language schools. I had the privilege of going to one. My first one was when I was 20, I think, and I was learning German for singers there. I was on a stage by like week, this is a 7 week program, by like week five, I was on a stage singing in German, like rolling around on the stage because they brought this person in from Vienna, who's like a dramatic coach who eventually got the pleasure of studying with like in for years. And I was like rolling around on the stage, like screaming my heart out in German. And I was like, oh, this is different. This is not, I'm learning to say some sounds and make them sound pretty in front of an audience. Like this is me living in another language, expressing that genuinely. Oh God, I need to just do this nonstop. It actually was a big pivotal point in my like educational career. I was planning on being an engineer. I was getting dual degrees, mechanical engineering and opera. And the opera thing was the hobby, wasn't career.
Wow.
And that moment of really expressing myself in German was this moment of realizing I didn't know this was available. I better go do this instead. And so I finished up, the engineering became the hobby. Wow. And opera became the career as a result of that moment.
Wow. I mean, so it sounds as if you felt something. You didn't just come to a realization in your head, like you felt something. And what a pivot. That's quite a pivot.
It was a lot. Yeah. It changed a lot of things in a life. Yeah. But I think like that, the moment of really being able to connect to someone else. And in this case, that someone else was a whole group of people. I mean, it was this audience, but feeling like this is a genuine moment of connection. That's special. You don't get a lot of those moments necessarily in a life, and it's a thing you got to run after. And so I did.
I'm so glad.
It was pretty special.
Yeah, that sounds special. And you're absolutely right. Not many people get that moment or recognize that moment. And then not many people act upon it, right? So that's always like, oh, I don't know if I can't do it. Okay, so let's sort of rewind a little bit. What language did you learn in high school? And back then, how long did it take you to master it?
I didn't. that's not true. I eventually did, but I had to come back to it. It was my third language. In high school, I learned Russian. Went to this great, great, great school. They had amazing teachers. I put in 5.5 years into Russian, so I was middle school and high schooler.
Wow.
And I got really good grades, and I did not speak Russian. I mean, I memorized some poems. I could say some stuff that were like pre-canned speeches, but I did not know that language. When I finally came back to it in, that would have been 2010. So at that point, God, this is like math time, but I guess I was like 27 at that point.
Wow.
I figured I would have known a lot. Like I put in 5.5 years. I figured starting over, I know something, right? And like,
right.
I did not. I knew the phonetic system, which was a real important thing. Like that matters a lot, as I imagine we'll probably talk about at some point today. But like that's kind of all I had. I had a little bit of the grammar. I feel like I had maybe 20% of the grammar needed in that language. I knew very, very few words, and that was that.
But it's not, that language is not just comprehension, right? There's a whole visual aspect to it. They have a different alphabet. They've got that Cyrillic thing. The shapes look funny, like maybe the R is the P for us, then the N is the M for them. I don't know, right?
It's great. Apparently someone outside, but that's Norbert. That is Norbert.
We'll have to see Norbert at some point.
We can bring up Norbert, the alphabet part of a language, like it looks scary, and it can really creep people out in some sense of being like, oh God, this looks like Greek literally, like that can be really frightening. But the alphabet part, you can get through in about a month, and it's no longer scary, especially with Russian. Like Russian is so closely related to the roots of all the like Roman character alphabets that you can kind of adapt to that within a week or two. It's not too rough. Okay. It's the grammar system. The grammar system is brutal. So that's Russian. Russian is hard for that reason.
Gotcha. Now, this podcast, Forever Fab, it's dedicated to helping people live a more beautiful and fabulous life. Now, from your perspective, how does learning a new language help someone to live a more beautiful life? And by extension, would you say that it's important to learn more than life?
I think there's kind of two angles for that. One is the quality of life that you're living now, and two is the kind of the quality of life that you are able, like how long can you have a high quality of life? And so like, let's talk that second one first, which is to say, people talk a lot about, you know, how do you delay dementia? How do you have yes. a good long life where you have your head on your shoulders? And so far, in terms of treatments for dementia, in some sense, or like things you can do to stave that thing off, I'm not aware of anything that has better measured results than language learning. Learning one language fluency will push back Alzheimer's onset by an average of 4 years. Learning more than one language will do more than that. There's it kind of starts scaling up. You can get maybe 5, 6, 7 years of average delay in Alzheimer's. And all forms of dementia, it functions as a kind of strength training for your brain. In some sense, you pick up a second voice in your head that's yammering away in French all day or in Spanish all day.
Right.
And you having to sort through the two voices in your head and being like, no, right now we're in English. It functions as executive function training all the time. It's like walking around the world with weights on your ankles. And that's pretty neat. I mean, the idea that that can just kind of happen and you can just simply get an extra 4 or 5 years of brain function, that's special.
Yeah.
But in terms of the present day, how you're walking through the world, I think on some level, yes, you can go travel and travel enriches your life. And that's absolutely true.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people learn languages for that purpose, this idea of I just want to go see, find the version of me that can live in Mexico and just have that life. And that's magical. I mean, the experiences I've had in Italy where I've gotten to actually talk to Italians about their it's a guy from Naples that we stayed with, my ex-wife and I, and he talks about pizza like a sexual act. It was just I've never encountered something like this. This is amazing.
It's so Italian, by the way. That is so Italian.
It's magic. I mean, and being able to
everything to
understand that in Italian is different than someone being able to translate that thing. You can't understand people in a second language in the way that you can in their first.
Those nuances, right?
It's the emotion in it and the nuances
passion
to it. Yeah, it's special there. But there is another thing also, which is that when you pick up a language later in life, the person you are at that stage of life that you picked up that language gets stored in the language. There is a German I learned mostly in Vienna, with no money, freaking out being an opera singer that can't make ends meet. German is a stressful language for me.
Yeah.
it's like fighting legal fights with my landlord are stored in German for me. But Italian is all pizza and gelato and good weather and beautiful people.
Oh, God.
And this idea of getting to kind of find excerpts of yourself and meeting them as a separate person.
Yeah.
That's an experience you can't have in any other way. You don't get to go meet different versions of yourself in that way. And for me, that's really what got me addicted to the topic.
Yeah.
Because that's a kind of peak experience and strange, out there experience that I don't know how else to get. So that one I think is not talked about very much. I don't think a lot of people get to kind of explore that. The travel one's kind of obvious, but the new sides of yourself thing, I think it helps you understand yourself in better ways than you did before. And that helps you lead a better life day to day. So for me, that's the one that I love. The travel one, I do love it. It's great. But it's the new meeting yourself part that I think is really, really special.
Well, I'm happy that I asked that question, and I'm even more grateful that you responded to it in that way, because you're right. Most people don't think of learning a language, especially later in life, as that. Some people learn a language because they have this corporate thing to do, or learn a language because they'd love to travel. But you're right. The way that you've described it, learning a language and getting to meet yourself or different versions of yourself is transcendent.
Mm-hmm. Well put.
Right. And that's a word that I ascribe to it, because that's what you described for me. Mm. Right. So that's a beautiful way to put it. And I thank you for that. Learning languages, knowing that everyone has a different learning style. Some people are more visual and certain visual, some people are more auditory, whatever the case may be. Can one truly master a new language and hold on to it, like sustainably through an app, And obviously I'm talking about your app. So is how feasible is that?
So yes, if you're doing it right. The best an app can do is direct your attention in the right way. I think a thing that people often want out of not just apps, but out of teachers, out of programs, out of like, you know, immersion programs, anything is, I just want to show up here and I want you to put it in me. Just give it to me so that at the end I have it. And I'm just going to sit here and wait for you to finish the job of giving me the thing that you want, that I want. I want French, make it happen. And it is, you don't get to skip the step of it being work. Yeah. You can make the work a good like 10 times more effective than you might have done in high school. You can make the work more fun. You can do all sorts of things to the work to make it more palatable and more doable, but like you don't get to skip it. It's work. Like this idea of, you know, I'm going to go get a six pack. I'm going to go become really, really strong. All that stuff. Like the way that you really achieve that thing is that you find a way to make it so that you want to go to the gym tomorrow.
That's right.
And maybe that's by making it short. Maybe that's by getting really great music. Maybe that's the only time you get to really like be on your own, like whatever it is. You find your reason for why that's the thing you want to do tomorrow. And then you do it every day for 6 months or for a year or whatever. And by the end of it, you have the big arms or whatever it is that you want. But you don't get to just show up at the gym and be like, good, like inject my arm and let me leave tomorrow and I will be strong again. Like that. We don't have that on the market yet for strength and muscle building. And we don't really have that on the market yet for language learning. That's not a thing. But it absolutely is the case that if you're using tools and you're using them in a way to make your work more effective, then like, absolutely, this is achievable. I mean, we've had people get to pretty solid fluency. The European scale, like they do this A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, C2, where like A is beginner, B is like intermediate, and C is really advanced. And we've gotten people to B2 or C1 Spanish, so like pretty damn fluent in about 6 to 9 months. At about in like 45 minutes to an hour a day. And so like it's an absolutely achievable thing that in terms of reaching fluency later in life, mostly using app-based tools. Like computers make things faster and they can make learning a lot faster.
That's right.
But each of those people that got to solid fluency in like 6 to 9 months, like they were doing the work.
Right, it is work. And I certainly wasn't aware of that scale. So each time I go to the open air market in Paris and I ask for something, whatever, and then they look at me and go, oh, you have an accent. And yes, we have, you know, the pantyhose or the stockings that show you have an accent. So in teaching people language through an app, what do you do about the accent? Is that something that one you can teach, or how does that work?
It is. It's just you have to be careful with it. There are these great studies done, I think in the early 2000s, on Japanese native speakers learning the difference between rock and lock. And they tested their accuracy in the beginning of, can you tell the difference between these two words? And their accuracy in the beginning is about like 50 to 53%. Like it was just like, they're guessing. Yeah. They're really guessing. They're doing slightly better than chance.
Yeah.
They then like had them practice rock and lock. They were just like, we're going to play these at random. We're just going to give you a lot of exposure to rock and lock. They did that for like, I think, 3 to 6 hours of training. And then at the end, they tested them again, and their accuracy was 50 to 55%. Oh, no change. Brutal.
Yeah.
And so practicing doesn't actually fix anything. And that's terrifying. Like the idea that you could throw in time and nothing happens. But then they did the same tests, and they made the practice really narrow in terms of how they're doing the practice, which is that they played rock or lock at random. And then they said, they asked the student, which one did we just say? And so they were like, rock. And they're like, I think that was the L one. And they're like, nope. And they would give them the feedback. They would give them the feedback, whether they got it right or wrong. And then they would repeat that. So just random word, student has to guess. And then student has to get feedback as to whether they're right or wrong. And it bumped their accuracy from 50% to 80% permanently in all contexts.
Interesting.
And that was 3 hours of intervention. And so like the idea that you can completely, like you have a Japanese adult who spent their whole lives guessing. And then in 3 hours, you've made it so that you've rewired their brain so they can hear a thing. magic, like just super, super cool. And so this kind of training is called minimal pair training. It's the idea of two words that are similar, except by like as close to close to the same as possible with only one tiny change, you know, rock versus lock or niece versus knees, or just like the last S and Z are different, this kind of thing. And so every language is full of these minimal pairs.
Yes.
And if you train straight on those, then you can rewire someone's ear. And once their ear is rewired, then they can start actually pronouncing things correctly. And so there is this kind of myth in the language learning world where like, oh, if you're not teaching someone who's like, if they're older than 7 years old, they can never fix an accent.
Right.
If they're older than 3 years old, if they're older than 12 years old, they pick a random number and they're like, this is the age, we know it. And but like every opera singer is able to learn a flawless accent. And the only thing that's special about opera singers is that they're getting paid to learn an accent. And so like either the thing you're talking about is like the essential ingredient to learning an accent is money, or actually we're all able to learn an accent just fine. And it's just a matter of being able to do it right. Like opera singers are well motivated, and that's actually the main difference. And they also, they happen to have coaches, like opera singers work with coaches who are like, you just said lake, I want break. And they're like, I can't hear the difference. You're like, well, we're just going to keep doing it until you do. Yeah. And so the natural way that singers tend to get the feedback is in minimal pair practice. And so if you can train ears, which is really the first ingredient, then you can fix this. But if you don't, and this is where people get stuck, where you're just like, I don't know, I'm just going to practice lots of, you know, bonjour, 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 bonjour. If I just keep saying bonjour, eventually it'll turn into bonjour. And like, it won't. Like, you actually have to train your ears to hear the difference between like bon and bon.
Right.
And bon. And like get closer and closer and be like, no, that's not quite it. This is what I'm hearing. This is what you're saying.
Exactly.
It's the nitpicky ear training work that you actually have to do, or else you will never get anywhere.
Well, I love that it's a matter of training your mind, because some people think that after a certain age, whether it's 15 and you can't lose the accent, whatever, or just, you know, 60 years old because, you know, you've done most of your learning. I love that the brain has this tremendous capacity that I'm sure you've heard and most of us have heard, that we have barely tapped into it.
Mm.
And so so I love that you can retrain the brain or continue to train the brain. And also, I think what's important to learn to know about learning languages is that it involves training your ear or retraining your ear. So that leads me to the question of, is it therefore possible to learn a language well, accent and everything, only by listening? Because there are some apps where they'll have you say something and, you know, repeat it, say it, and then they'll have you repeat it after the, you know, professional on the app repeats it audibly. So is it possible to learn a language well only by listening?
It's hard. I would say it's, you're cutting off so many sources of input, and like languages are ultimately an input game. It's how much, there's this linguist guy named Steve Krashen, who's this theorist, who basically said that most language acquisition is done through this thing called comprehensible input, which is to say, if you put on a TV show of like hardcore news in Mandarin, you're going to understand none of it. And if you play it for 50 hours every week and you just stare at it every day, like, you're pretty much going to understand none of it. And so you have accomplished nothing. You've gotten no comprehensible input. You've gotten lots of input, but nothing comprehensible. Whereas if you're sitting in a room and someone like hands you this delicious baked treat and is like, "Hi, willst du eine Kekse?" And puts it in your face, and you're like, "Huh?" And you're like, "Kekse, willst du eine Kekse?" And you grab it and you eat it, and you're like, and they're like, "Das war eine gute Kekse, ne?" And you're like, "I guess this thing's probably this cookie thing." Kekse. And suddenly you've gotten a whole bunch of useful, good input. Getting that via sounds alone is hard. Gesture is kind of our first language. And if you can get gesture early, if you can get visual stuff early, then now you're starting to learn some things. As you start connecting that to the written word on the page, now you can get input faster and in more ways. As you can connect stuff on the page to things you're hearing, now the stuff on the page actually matters more, and it's more useful input. And like, so there's different qualities of input, and you're getting better input now because the stuff on the page is now hitting you in more directions. Yeah. So if you're restricting yourself to just pure audio, you're really cutting things down. And generally the way people do audio is by trying to have you memorize translations. We're going to say, you know, here's how you say hello, bonjour, right. Hello, bonjour. And you're like, okay, well, your brain actually hates translation. It's the least useful information. It's stuff where you're like, well, why do I need this? I know how to say hello.
Right.
And so there is a filtering system that we all use. It's this framework that's called levels of processing that will filter out useless information. It's why you don't like memorize every brand of 100 deodorants in the grocery store.
Right.
Like you see them, but you dump them. And translation is in the dumping category. And so audio only options tend to be translation focused. And for that reason, also you're running uphill when you're trying to learn purely that way.
So it's like baking a cake or a cookie, right? So there's so many ingredients that are involved to create the final product. And sure, you can have a cookie, but the fact that, you know, it tastes great, it looks good, it smells good, all those different ingredients involve lots of different input, right?
Mm-hmm.
To be able to create the final product. So what would you say of immersion? Do you think that that is sort of the ultimate way to learn, or just another component of learning a language well?
Immersion does most of the things you want to do. Like it has most of those ingredients of that particular cookie that you want. The things you need basically are you need high quality memories, and then you need to have them repeated at the right rate. So in terms of high quality memories, the immersion has you covered. You have things that are multi-sensory. You have all the gesture you want. You got actual food in front of you. You got actual smells, actual sights, actual things to hear. Like immersion has it all. You're not dealing with translation. And so you're not dealing with that filter issue. You can make immersion better by doing the ear training first. And so if you're showing up with an untrained ear, then you're going to pick up less via your immersion than if you showed up with a trained ear. But you can train your ear and then do immersion. So then it's pretty, pretty good.
Yeah.
But the thing immersion is missing is, well, when are you repeating that information afterwards? Immersion hits you in the face with a fire hose. And that's a great fire hose. It's the best fire hose, really. I love immersion. I've done it a whole bunch of times. It's magic. It's a special kind of stress, really.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's stressful.
It's so stressful. I mean, I dream about being back in the Vermont immersion schools basically once a month, and it's been 10 years since I've been there.
Wow.
But it was such an intense and frankly traumatic experience, but also a good experience that I think about it all the time.
Yeah.
But the piece that is missing with immersion is you do your 3-week, your 6-week, your 7-week immersion. What happens at the end? What happens a year later? What happens 2 years later, et cetera? And there are computerized tools, and there's some kind of complex non-computerized tools, which is like boxes of flashcards, and you only look at this box every 2 days and that one every 7 days and this kind of thing. You can kind of simulate the computer thing, but there are systems basically that will teach you a thing, you know, das ist eine Kekse, and then we'll withhold that information from you for a certain period of time, let's say 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then like right now it's Monday, and then like Friday comes back and it's like, Kekse, was ist das?
Oh.
And you're like, shit, that was a few days ago.
The
cookie thing. I remember that. Yeah. And then it says, okay, we know that you can handle 4 days. So I'm going to withhold that again. And now I'm going to wait 7 days. I'm going to try that again.
Interesting.
And if you could do 7 days, we'll try 12 days. We'll try 20 days. We'll try 40 days. And the moment you mess up, it resets it and says, okay, let's try 4 days again.
Yeah.
And these systems, they're called spaced repetition systems. They are magical. They are the best thing we have, the closest we have to the matrix of just, I know Kung Fu thing. Like that's what we have that's actually good.
Yeah.
And you don't get that in immersion. And so if you do an immersion experience, what you want is, well, now I want some way to remind me about the things I learned, but do it with this spacing system that makes it so that I don't have to spend hours every day remembering, like going through every photo on my phone and every like audio track that I, you know, did during that immersion, but rather just, no, today we're going to remember about Kekse. You know, tomorrow we're going to remember about that pizza thing that we talked to my friend about. Like that's what you want long-term, to have a perfectly efficient system.
Okay. So then that you actually partially answered my next question, which is if there were to be one, which I know there are many, but let's just say that if there were to be one key aspect to learning a language deeply and holding onto what you've learned over time, what would that be? You alluded to it, but if there were one thing, would it be?
Give me one thing or two things.
Give me one chocolate chip in that cookie.
All right, the one chocolate chip is going to be the high quality memories. You can, like, immersion works, and that will get you all the way to fluency. And frankly, that's enough. And so if you can build memories that are based on what is the actual thing and not what is the translation for the thing, then you are going to win in a way that other options don't give you. And so what you're looking for is that when I, like if I tell you, you know, the Hungarian word for dog is kutyo.
Kutyo?
You haven't, kutyo. And so here's a couple issues. One is that I'm using a bunch of sounds you've never heard before.
Right.
And so you have that issue. And so there's that ear training thing. Mm-hmm. But if you can get past that, and I'm like, kutyo, and you're like, okay, kutyo. It's an oh sound at the end, and it's a u in the middle, kutyo. Mm-hmm. Then I still haven't taught you anything, because you're just like, kutyo dog, whatever. Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to try to remember that thing. But the issue is that your word dog, it's connected to all the dogs you've seen in your life. It's connected to to words like cat and animal and paw and pet.
Right.
It's connected to lassie, and there's all these cultural references. Like, dog has everything in it, and kutyo has nothing in it. And so there's no way for you to hold on to that word. Whereas if I showed you my favorite kutyo, and I'm like, you know, kutyo, come here. And then, like, I got Norbert, and I was like, kutyo.
Yeah. Yeah.
At that point, then suddenly that word means something. In the same way that, like, if you go to, I don't know, like a sushi restaurant, and they give you maguro, mm-hmm. and you eat it, and you're like, this is delicious. What is this called?
Well,
like maguro.
Yeah.
Then suddenly you remember maguro. Or you right. remember tamago, because you're like, I've never had egg like that. That's so good. Yeah. It's sweet. Like, this is yummy.
Yeah.
We don't have problems going to restaurants and remembering names of food. Sometimes we don't pronounce them the way that they're there, but we remember it instantly because it's new.
Yeah.
And kutyo is not dog. Kutyo is a Hungarian dog. Like, if you look on Google Images for kutyo, you see different dog breeds than the ones we would pick here.
Okay.
No words are the same in any language. And right. the moment that you actually start, like, learning what that word means and what that word is connected to. Like, sabaka in Russian is the word for dog, but, like, that word, I remember watching movies in Russian where, like, dogs are the terrifying thing out in the woods that eats your boots, like, eats you all the way down into your boots. It's not man's best friend. It's a terrifying, like, thing in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Like, that's sabaka. It's not lassie. It's right. the scary thing. And, like, if you learn words the way, like, for words, meaning like you're learning the associations in the word, yeah. not some translation, then you're doing the thing that immersion does for you automatically.
Yes.
But you're being really direct about it. You're saying, okay, well, I got this word kutyo. How do I put the right pictures in? How do I put the right sounds in? How do I put the right associations in? And if you do that, then you're going to remember kutyo tomorrow.
Right.
And you're going to remember the next word the day after that.
You've just listened to part one of Forever Fab podcast. Please stay tuned for part two coming up next.